Wednesday, August the 28th, 2024. Welcome back. Adam Pfeiffer here for the numbers. Just about a week out from the start of the NFL season. Preseason's over. A couple days, we're going to be asking ourselves, what are we doing with our lineups? And that is incredible. But draft season, not over yet. This is a huge week, and especially the weekend coming up for fantasy drafts. Earlier this week, we talked about, and we kind of revisited some of my favorite sleepers for the 2024 season. So today, we got to go the opposite direction. We got to go with players that could be potential bust candidates. And to rain on all of the parades today, I brought on Mike Randall, my colleague from FTN. Was on the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast with him earlier this week, so make sure you check that out, as well as all the amazing podcasts part of FTN Media. But Mike, how's it going? Obviously busy time for all of us at FTN, especially yourself, but I appreciate the time.
You brought me back for hump day. This is tremendous. I am excited to be here. You killed it on the Fantasy Football Podcast, so I am going to bring the fire, bring my beliefs, which you know, Fife, I bring unadulterated here. Oh, yeah. So very excited to talk about busts. This is a lot more fun than talking about hits. So I'm honored to be back with you.
Yeah, and rankings up at FTNFantasy.com. Sign up today. Use that promo code still available, FTN15, to get yourself 15% off. Trying to update rankings every day and going looking at the rankings on the site. And some of yours are pretty bold. So and it was fun to do kind of that episode with you talking about some things that we would be shocked if they didn't happen. So check that out. And of course, this podcast, just like it was last season, brought to you by the amazing people over at Circa. With the return of the NFL, so are the largest pro football contests in Vegas. Circa Survivor and Circa Millions, now up to a record $16 million in guaranteed prizes. There's two ways to win and absolutely zero rake. Circa Survivor contestants select one team each week with no point spread, lasts the longest to win it all with $10 million guaranteed. With Circa Millions, make five picks against the spread each week for your share of $6 million guaranteed through quarterly and full season payouts. Sounds easy. Trust me, it's not. Enter in Nevada or play from anywhere. Visit circusports.com for the details. Mike, before we talk about some of these bust candidates, I'm not sure if you've been on Twitter the past 24 hours, but Kyren Williams is returning punts, and the fantasy community is going crazy, and it's fun. I joke, but like it's fun having all the different opinions and discussion. But there's people who are either going to take this two ways. One, cool, this is good. Sean McVay wants Kyren Williams to get the ball in his hands more. Or, oh no, they just drafted Blake Corum. They want to, you know, they want to keep, you know, Kyren Williams, you know, getting this role, but also might take away some carries from him. For me, I was all. This whole offseason, I've been of the belief that I'm not going to draft a lot of Kyren just because I view him as like a late second round player, and he goes at the turn in a lot of drafts, so I just have been getting him. So this really doesn't do anything to me, or for me, to Kyren, but are you reacting at all to this? Is this just like, we're in late August, it's relative news, or is this just simply like, hey, cool, how many punts is he going to actually return anyway? Like, it's not like teams punt seven times a game unless you're playing, you know, the Giants or last year's Panthers.
No, this is not information that you should react to and draw a conclusion off of. But what it is, Adam, is it should confirm any prior feelings that you had about Kyren Williams. If you believe that Kyren Williams is the center or one of the centers of this offense, then you believe when he says he wants to get the ball in his hands more as one of the best playmakers.
Right.
I mean, DeSean Jackson returned punts for years.
Kamara,
of course. So that's fine. However, if you were like, it sounds like you and I, and believed that his hold on the running back one position was a little tenuous because he is 5'9", because he is under 200 pounds, because he ran a 4'6", 5'40", coming into the NFL, and you believe that maybe Kyren Williams is just a guy who had the ideal situation last year, then this actually will confirm that particular bias as well. So I have not been taking a lot of Kyren Williams. When I took him, I did handcuff him, which I'm a huge fan of. Some people are not, but I am, because he was an early pick for me, a round two selection. So I'm just victory lapping the fact that I do have 21% exposure to Blake Corum in underdog fantasy best ball drafts. That's all.
Yeah. So like I was saying, I had a home league draft over the weekend where I had, it was a, you know, there was players being kept. So like Breece Hall was off the board. Jahmyr Gibbs was off the board. I had the 10th pick and all the elite receivers were gone. So I started with Jonathan Taylor, and on the turn, Kyren was there. Pacheco was there. Derrick Henry was there. This is also a weird format too. It's non-PPR, but you do get 3 points for every 5 receptions. So like it is, but it isn't. And I debated between Pacheco and Henry, but I think this format is actually pretty good for Henry. Yeah, and I have, you know, Pacheco ahead of Kyren. But it's also mostly been because the last month I've been getting really excited about Isaiah Pacheco. But like, I know you like Pacheco more than him, right?
I do. Because the only negative I can come up with Pacheco is injury risk. And that's just something.
And that's every really, player that plays that position, really. So
that's exactly right. So I'm going to be concerned. This will play out. I mean, if Kyren Williams has a really solid year and produces close to what he does last year, it's going to be hard to repeat it. But close, then it's going to be supporting the people who said, no, this is what it is. He just wants to get the ball in his hands more. But if Corm becomes a larger part of the offense, and it's more of a timeshare than we think, and or Kyren Williams gets hurt on a punt return, then it's going to support our theory. So I don't think you should react to this at all. I think you should have had an opinion prior to this, and you can take it however you want. But if you put me in a lie detector test on me, I think this is bad for Kyren Williams, and I think it is good for Blake Corm. What I loved, Adam, I put on social media as well, McVay talked about how he really wants to get Blake Corm and Ronnie Rivers involved. That's like saying Two Gun and I have both won 5 millimakers together. I don't think Ronnie Rivers is as big a part, but he's got to say that because he's
It's like saying the day Donovan Mitchell scored 70. It's like Donovan Mitchell and
Tony Snell, when Tony Snell had all zeros. And you get, right, exactly. Same thing. So I Kyren Williams had a great year last year. He rewarded everyone. He's in the millimaker optimal lineup that won the $3 million. I get it. To me, he's an injury prone guy who's had problems with his ankle. He got a unique situation last year because no one trusted Cam Akers. He's 5'9", he's 194, he's undersized. He's not super fast, 4'6". Yes, he can catch passes out of the backfield, but they invested early round draft capital in Blake Corm. So I think this is a bad sign, but time will tell. But if you're asking me, yes, I'm victory lapping my 21% of Blake Corm. Yes.
Worst case, I would say, like, if you already had Kyren ranked incredibly closely to players like Henry, ETN, Pacheco, maybe you can use this as a tie-breaking piece of news. That's kind of where I'm at, if anything.
Totally agree.
The Cowboys, clearly all in. They signed Dalvin Cook today. They have the best backfield in football, Mike, in 2018. They really do. They really do. It sounds like he's going to at least start on the practice squad. It's weird, though, because, like, all offseason they've been talking up, yeah, Rico Dowdle's like he's the guy we're kind of going to lean on, and they obviously have Zeke, and then they were talking about Royce Freeman, who obviously just got released. So it's like, I'm not making anything of this. I don't want to draft anybody from this backfield. I didn't prior to this, and I especially don't now. The one thing I will say is, imagine if this move happened 2 days ago before CD was extended. People would be losing their minds. But now it's just like, whatever, this doesn't do much.
Yeah, my take on this is, first of all, I think Dalvin Cook is washed. I don't really care about that. But I do think Rico Dowdle has some value because he's going so late. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who's 5'11", 213, so he's a little bit bigger, runs a 4.5 40, has good burst, solid burst, and did some nice things last year. So what I like about this is for those last few drafts that either haven't happened for redraft or best ball drafts, if you want to get them before the season starts, I think this is going to suppress Rico Dowdle's ADP to a point where he's even more of a value. So I think he's the lead guy. I'm with you, Adam. I think he's a 70% touch guy, but I think he has value because I think Dalvin Cook is washed. This does nothing to me. So Dowdle is the guy there, and I think his ADP will go down. I don't expect huge production from him, but I don't believe in Zeke, and I don't believe in Dalvin Cook. So to me, this is a non-starter. It just makes me want Dowdle a little bit more. I'm not saying he's an anchor for me. I'm just saying a little bit more.
Also had a couple players season-ending IR, A.J. Dillon in Green Bay, Elijah Mitchell in San Francisco. Mitchell just continues to have, you know, it's a shame. He's had really issues staying healthy. Jordan Mason appears to be the clear backup to Christian McCaffrey, who obviously has been dealing with the calf. So he's somebody that needs to be even more so on radars now. And then for Green Bay, obviously, the weird thing too was like before the A.J. Dillon news came out, there was a report I saw that Marshawn Lloyd was expected to start the season on the PUP list with a hamstring, but he's fine. But also, I think I saw earlier today that they expect Emmanuel Wilson to open the season as the backup to Josh Jacobs. So Dillon obviously has been, like, if you started Dillon in any games last season when Aaron Jones was out, you just were not happy. So he's been really disappointing. I don't know what his role would have been. They were kind of talking him up a little bit before this, but does this make you want to be more excited about Josh Jacobs, knowing that maybe Marshawn Lloyd's not quite ready yet to be the backup? And, you know, Manny Wilson's a player that's been fine for them, but I've been kind of lower on Jacobs this offseason. But when it first initially looked like he was going to be on Green Bay and Aaron Jones is gone and Dillon wasn't re-signed, I was like, this is going to be awesome because he's going to get the same workload he's gotten with the Raiders, but in a much better offense. Does this move do anything for you for Green Bay? Then obviously, I think San Francisco is pretty cut and dry. Jordan Mason's the clear backup to Christian McCaffrey in, you know, arguably the best offense in the NFL.
I feel very locked in on this one, very invested because of my drafts. I talked to Andy Herman on the Pack-A-Day podcast on the FDN team preview series a couple months ago, and I'd agree with him 100%. He said that we needed to pump the brakes on Marshawn Lloyd. Mm-hmm. I think that people who are fantasy analysts who obviously get involved in the draft like you and I do, our tendency is to overreact because we see players dominate in college and we just say, oh, this player is going to translate. Their skill set is going to translate. Lloyd is fast, good cut runner, productive, get it. Two issues that Herman cited with Lloyd. Number one, his fumbling issues. Number two, pass protection has to be strong. Whether he could do it in college, whether he can do it in the pros is a different thing. This is a Green Bay Packers team that has Super Bowl aspirations. So they're not just going to take Marshawn Lloyd, as great as he was in college, and plug him in. So I thought, as did Andy Herman, that A.J. Dillon was going to start the season as the RB2. Big guy, good in pass protection. Yes, he's a plotter. He makes Cedric Benson look fast. I get it. But I think they wanted to bring Lloyd along slowly. When Lloyd got hurt in the preseason, I said, we're all set. It's going to be A.J. Dillon. He's going to be the third back. But obviously, Dillon was hurt and he's gone. It does not surprise me that Manny Wilson is there. While, yes, I do think Adam, this helped Josh Jacobs, the big winner for me, and I'll say it again, is Jordan Love. This team is not going to run the ball an excessive amount with an older back in Josh Jacobs, Manny Wilson, and Marshawn Lloyd. They're not. I think they're going to skew even more pass heavy. They have four fantastic receivers. We struggled to know who to stack with during our drafts, but I think this is great for Jordan Love. It's great for the passing attack. Yes, it's very good for Josh Jacobs because his goal line role and his majority of touches are secure, but I think they're going to work those other backs in. But the idea that Marshawn Lloyd is going to take over the starting running back position, even if Josh Jacobs got hurt, that is not true. I don't see it happening. It could happen next year. It could happen in the future, but I think it's really good for Josh Jacobs. And I think it's great for the Packers passing attack. Jordan Love for MVP. I'm investing even more now.
Yeah, from talking to you, I know how much you like Jordan Love. I believe you said he's going to throw 40 touchdown passes this season.
He will have 40, maybe 36 and 4 or something. He will have 40 touchdowns. Yes, he will, Adam.
That'd be really, really good. And I'll talk about this Green Bay offense a little bit too, but there's obviously reasons to be excited about the Packers. Mike, we have drafts coming up. Probably happening tonight for a lot of people, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all weekend. It's a huge draft season. And perhaps more important than knowing who to draft is maybe who not to draft. So let's talk about some potential bust candidates for 2024. And we also have a series at FTNFantasy.com where a ton of different analysts are highlighting three players that you're just a little bit too high on. Looking at the consensus rankings at FTN Fantasy, I published an article on Monday of three players, I think. And again, it's all different opinions. That's why we do it. That's why it's so fun to talk about it. But I'll kick it to you first. Any position, you can start at quarterback if you want, if you have one. Any position, who's the first player that stands out to you as a potential bust candidate for this fantasy football season?
New England Patriots running back Ramondre Stevenson. I think he is being ranked too high. I think their offensive line is one of the worst in the NFL. I have concerns about him. He disappointed last year. He was on our high stakes specialist, Nelson Sousa's fade list. I don't like him this year. Antonio Gibson is there. I think they're going to be trailing. I know he's a pass catching back and he has talent, but I really am concerned about the offensive line. That's why I've dropped him. He is being ranked around players such as Aaron Jones, massively secure role in Minnesota. David Montgomery on an offense that I think is one of the best in the NFL and is the clear goal line back. Raheem Mostert, who I know everyone just is off of because they feel that the touchdowns and the season last year was a career year. But at worst, I think Raheem Mostert, barring major injury, gets at least 10 touchdowns on the ground, and that should put him ahead of Stevenson. DeAndre Swift, who's the clear RB1 for Chicago, I don't get it. So Ramondre Stevenson, for me, he is more of a very, very low-end RB2, possibly RB3. I don't see it.
Yeah, Ramondre is actually somebody I haven't really... Like, early in the offseason, I was... One of my favorite sleepers was Antonio Gibson, and then Stevenson got the contract extension, and that made me a little bit lower on Gibson just because... kind of told me that they would probably give Stevenson a massive workload. I wonder, because Gibson is just... I know Zeke had a really good end of the season last season with the Patriots. A lot of it was because he just got a ton of checkdowns. I think Gibson's a better, higher upside pass catcher than Zeke, so I wonder if that takes Stevenson off the field on some third downs, because the Patriots are going to be like a 5-6 win team at best. So having the 2-minute drill player would be more enticing. The question I have with Stevenson is, how does he fit with Alex Van Pelt's new scheme? For years, the Patriots were running this kind of just, you know, kind of man duo power run concept. This year with Van Pelt, they're switching to outside zone. And Stevenson, I don't know how well he fits that scheme. I think Gibson, you can make the case, might fit it a little bit better. Last season, you look at the advanced stats up at FTNFantasy.com. Stevenson had just 24 carries on outside zone runs, averaged 3.5 yards per carry. So, not a massive sample size, but even going back later than that, or I guess earlier than that, he just doesn't have a huge track record running outside zone. So that's what I'm interested to see. Would you rather have Stevenson or the Pittsburgh running backs?
Oh, Pittsburgh running backs. Not even close. I think they're going to run Najee Harris into the ground with usage because it is his final year there. I like Jaylen Warren's pass-catching ability. Mm-hmm. I have no interest in Ramondre Stevenson. I don't want a back that disappointed last year on a bad team with a bad offensive line. No interest.
That's fair. I'll stay with the running backs as well. And for me, I honestly, like, I could have made the case for Kyren, but it's not even that I think he's going to be bad. It's just he goes higher than I would like to draft him. So I'm not getting him in any drafts, really. I kind of am getting more and more nervous about Zamir White as the preseason goes on.
That was my number two. Good call.
Yeah,
good call.
So like we obviously saw that sample size last year when Jacobs was out down the stretch where he was averaging like 22 touches per game. And the Raiders, nothing's changed. Like they still want to run the football and play defense. But the upside would have been if Zamir White was going to get the third down role. And in the preseason, he hasn't gotten that at all. Like he's losing snaps to Dylan Labbe in the passing downs role, so that hurts his upside. Then if that doesn't happen, you're looking at somebody who's getting first and second down work on a bad team. And where he goes in drafts, like it could be a similar situation when we drafted guys like Mike Davis and Miles Gaskin in the past. Now I'm not saying like Zamir White I think is probably more talented than those guys, but that's the type of running back that can be disappointing in fantasy if he's not getting third down usage on a bad team, which is what could happen to Stevenson too. So like where he goes before both Tennessee running backs. I'd rather have both Tennessee running backs. He goes, I understand like one player is going to start the season, but I'm drafting to win my league. I'll just, you know, go zero RB if I have to and get like Jonathan Brooks and then pair him with like Jerome Ford and Chuba Hubbard. And I think I can have an absolute ceiling of like a top 15 running back when Brooks comes back. Javonte Williams I'd rather have over Zamir White. So I'm definitely, and I wasn't like crazy high on him going into the offseason, but from what we've seen in the preseason usage, and like what's the ceiling for the Raiders offense to be like the 19th best scoring offense in the NFL, just not too excited.
Adam Hill of the Las Vegas Journal Review said to me a month and a half ago that he saw multiple packages during practice of Brock Bowers getting goal line touches. Mm-hmm. Now, Brock Bowers dealing with, I believe, a foot injury right now, but We heard Alexander Mattison is going to have a major part in this offense. I agree with that. We've seen Brock Bowers now potentially get goal line carries. And this is an offense that I think is going to struggle and have a lot of negative game script with a dominant wide receiver, one who's going to want the ball in the red zone. Zero interest in Zamir White for me.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, wide receivers, quarterbacks, tight ends, more players that Mike Randall and I think will disappoint in 2024 fantasy football. Don't move a muscle. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Mike Randall from FTN Fantasy joining me on the podcast. Follow him on Twitter at RandallRant. Mike, we talked about some players out of the backfield that could disappoint. If you have any more, feel free to bring them up. But if not, let's move on to either quarterbacks or some of the pass catchers that you think could be in for maybe not a bad season, because that's not really what a bust means in fantasy, but somebody that just might not live up to the ADP.
I always believe that you should draft people, Adam, and players that fit how your projections go. I encourage anyone out there who is a Houston Texans fan or likes the wide receivers on Houston to take the numbers from last year, CJ Stroud, completions, attempts, etc., and project those numbers in the entire receiving core, tight ends, running backs, this year. I defy you to try to get Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell all to their ADP. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to do that, then you're giving either CJ Stroud over 100 more pass attempts. I gave him 60, by the way, in my projection. You're giving them tremendous pace, scoring, upside, and you're looking for a season similar to the one Peyton Manning had in Denver when he supported Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, and Wes Welker, all for a wide receiver two or better performances, which included 55 touchdowns from Mr. Manning. Somebody in this Houston Texan wide receiver trio is way overvalued. Who that is up to everyone to decide. I love Nico Collins. I think he's an incredible receiver, one of the best in the NFL. I don't see how he hits his number if Stephon Diggs performs the way Stephon Diggs is able to perform. And I'm hearing also from Nelson Susan or Discord that they're using Stephon Diggs in a variety of ways, that they really have prioritized getting the ball in his hands. That's fine. Then maybe both of them are okay, and Tank Dell doesn't achieve. So this one is sort of a cop-out, Adam, for me. Someone in the Texans wide receiver trio is not going to hit ADP. I'm not advocating to take one over the other. What I'm saying is you need to make that determination before you go into your draft and draft accordingly. Because if you just say, I'm taking Collins and Diggs, and you don't project how poorly Tank Dell's going to do, that's fine. And if you see that Tank Dell really has to perform a lot better, then maybe you don't take Collins or Diggs, or maybe, Adam, you don't take any at all. But if you just look at the projections and do the math, there is no way that those three receivers are hitting ADP. And if they are, please draft CJ Stroud.
Yeah, so for me, I don't have Stroud as a bust. I do think he's overvalued because I think unless he has one of those like Peyton Manning 50 touchdown, you know, whatever seasons, I don't think there's going to be a massive, massive difference in final season production between like Stroud as the QB4, QB5 and Dak Prescott, Jordan Love, Joe Burrow. Like guys are going to throw the ball quite a bit, have great talent around them. Dak has fine talent around him, I guess. But, for me, the guy I'm worried about, and it's not because I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, but Stephon Diggs, I don't think is like washed like everybody thinks he is because at the end of the last season, like a lot of his, like he did, Josh Allen did just miss him on a lot of deep touchdowns that would have maybe changed the way he's kind of looked at going into the season, but he's obviously on the decline. And his time in Buffalo, he spent four seasons there. He averaged 160 targets per year. The highest target share for the second option in the passing game in any of those seasons in Buffalo was 17%. It was Cole Beasley one of those years. Like, Collins or Dell or both are getting over a 17% target share. That's happening. And other than, like, the second half of last season when Brady took over, the Bills were this, especially with Daboll, they were pass first, pass second. They were towards the top of the NFL every year in early down pass rate. Even with the addition of Stephon Diggs, I think we're going to see Bobby Slowick do what he did last season and still want to be run first offense. They were top five in early down run rate and set up play action on deep shots to Collins and Tank Dell on post routes. That's what they really did well. And Last year, I looked at a lot of the advanced stats in the Stats Hub about Stephon's production on deep routes. On both go and post routes last season, this is, of course, via the Stats Hub, which you can check out at ftnfantasy.com. 27 targets on go and post routes. He only had 7 catches. He averaged 2.7 yards per route run and 0.04 EPA per target. Now, again, a couple of those were just slightly overthrown deep balls, but overall, his metrics on vertical routes were not good. So I think he's going to kind of be like the slot receiver here, which is fine. He can still get open really, really well. But yeah, I think it's pretty easy that one of the Texans wide receivers is going to disappoint. My bet is simply on the player that's 30 years old. But I also at the same time, like, he's declining, but he's not washed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I early on in the best ball drafts, I was taking a lot of Nico Collins, mm-hmm. dismissing Diggs and Dell. And then the ADP started dropping, so I adjusted. That's my point, is when I say a bust, and you and I are talking about it, I just think that people have to make that determination on how they think it's going to go, and I would draft accordingly. Because what you don't want to do is just take a Texans player to take it, because when they don't perform, you're going to say, oh, see, they don't perform. And when they do perform, they're going to say, oh, well, next week they're probably going to underperform. And you're making yourself miserable during a redraft season when you have to determine who you're going to start.
I'll stay with the wide receivers, and I talked about him months ago about potentially being the worst selection in fantasy drafts. I'll stand by that. It's Jaden Reed. I don't understand why he goes where he goes. Like, wide receiver 35, he goes ahead of guys like Godwin, Deontay Johnson. I understand there was definitely things to like about what we saw from his usage in his rookie season. For starters, Matt LaFleur finally got to use way more pre-snap motion, which Aaron Rodgers just didn't want to do. The Packers went up to like top 12 in pre-snap motion despite after being like outside the top 20 with Rodgers. And that helped Jaden Reed because he was the guy getting all of those scheme touches out of pre-snap motion, the jet sweeps, the handoffs, the free releases, etc. But he wasn't a full-time player as a rookie, despite Watson missing all the time he missed. And you look at the games where Christian Watson was healthy, weeks 4 through 13. Jaden Reed was third on the Packers with a 14.6% target share. He averaged 4.9 targets, 3.4 receptions, and 40.6 yards per game, so nothing special. And looking at the Stats Hub, during those weeks 4 through 13, the first Reed targets for the Packers, Watson, 44, Dobbs, 36, Reed, 26. So for me, like, if it's A, what we expected to be in terms of like crowded, a lot of targets going everywhere, why would I want to draft the first wide receiver in that offense? Granted, it's a good offense that we want pieces of. And B, like, it was clear that he was running as the third wide receiver, let alone the second or 1B. So Jaden Reed is somebody I just like, I liked what I saw last year. I think he's going to be good for them for a long time, but I just think he's way overvalued.
Yeah, I liked Jaden Reed earlier in the summer when there was still questions about Christian Watson's hamstring. Watson is, in my opinion, the clear wide receiver one. He brings something per Andy Herman.
And he goes relatively later. It's just like, why would I not take Watson?
Right. The only fear is the injury. But then when you worry about injuries, you miss out on the upside.
And that's already baked into his ADP anyway.
Totally agree.
Like, if Christian Watson had a bill of health, a clean bill of health, he would be a top five round selection in drafts pretty easily. Because obviously the production would be great in those games he hadn't missed. But like, the weeks 4 through 13, when he was active, he was, I think, top 5 in end zone targets. You know who else was top 10 in end zone targets that same stretch? Romeo Dobbs.
Yeah, I like Dobbs. I like this entire offense, but I found myself gravitating towards just Love and Watson. That's what I've done. And people want to grab Dontavian Wicks, and then he wasn't really playing in the preseason scrimmage that they had with the team. And then he hit a deep bomb yeah. on the pass play, and everybody's back on him. So I think he's feast or famine. I like Dobbs. I think he gets open in the end zone. And I like Jaden Reed. He's fine, just not where he's getting drafted ADP-wise. I agree.
I struggle because I wrote a piece for the site about kind of like the top wide receiver handcuffs. And Dontavian Wicks was on that list. And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, they love Romeo Dobbs. He is going to be like the Gabe Davis of their offense, where he plays 90%+ of snaps, gets end zone targets, etc. He's not coming off the field. Christian Watson, if healthy, not coming off the field. And then Jaden Reed projects to be a perfect kind of slot receiver, get the scheme touches too. But at the same time, if Dontavian Wicks, we're like week 7 and he keeps producing like he did last season, how do you not have him on the field? So That's where I struggle with Wicks, because like, it's going to be hard for him to consistently get on the field, but if he keeps playing how he's been playing, how do you not put him on the field? But we also have to add to the fact, too, they didn't have their two tight ends really healthy at the same time last season, and they're pretty high on both Musgrave and Kraft. So, yeah, maybe it's as simple as draft Jordan Love and take a shot on one of those receivers, but to me, because Jaden Reed's going the earliest, it's not going to be him for me.
Yeah, they're very high on Tucker Kraft, too, especially. I'm almost drafting him ahead of Musgrave in certain drafts.
All right, Mike, who's next?
I am notorious for being down or below consensus on rookie wide receivers. I do not get the Marvin Harrison love as your wide receiver 10, give or take, in fantasy drafts. I understand he's super dynamic. I have yet to see some incredible chemistry with Kyler Murray. I think Trey McBride's role is solidified in that offense. I think Michael Wilson even showed a connection in the last two games with Kyler Murray. The idea that I'm going to put Marvin Harrison ahead of Chris Olave, the clear wide receiver one in New Orleans, who has achieved that way. Deebo Samuel, who if Brandon Ayuk is traded, could absolutely go through the room. Mike Evans, who all he does is produce 1,000-yard receiving seasons. And even someone like Jalen Waddle, who's in a massive offense, I don't see it. I like Marvin Harrison. I'm fine in the top 20 with Marvin Harrison. I have not drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. at the 1-2 turn in a best ball draft the entire year. I think it's too risky. My first round pick in fantasy is not going to be Marvin Harrison Jr. I like him. I think it takes time. I don't think Kyler is some incredible pocket passer. So a lot of that is going to be flushed out of the pocket and looking to create things. And that takes time with a rookie. Not doubting his talent, not doubting his ability, not doubting the sustained NFL success that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to have in Arizona. I am doubting that he is going to produce like a top 10 wide receiver in the 2024 NFL season.
It's interesting with him because you are most definitely drafting him at a ceiling already, so there really isn't any value to be had. I looked back. So last time I looked for the projections at FTN, we had Harrison projected for about 130 targets. There have only been 11 wide receivers to see at least 130 targets during their rookie season. Among those receivers, the average fantasy finish was around wide receiver 15. Five players were wide receiver 13 or better. Obviously, Puka last season, Odell Beckham his rookie season was wide receiver 7. Anquan Boldin back in 2003 was a wide receiver 6. But he's being drafted like top 10. So it is tough. Like I haven't honestly had many, like for whatever reason, anytime I join a best ball draft, I pick towards the top. So I haven't even had many opportunities to decide if I want to draft Marvin Harrison at the 12 or the 13 spot. But yeah, like there's no doubt about it. We're drafting him at his ceiling without question. So.
And that's what it is. I just don't want to take him there. And when we give you these busts, we're not talking about players that we think are going to be 20 or 30 spots below where they are, but a 3, 4, or 5 spot difference is critical, and that can make a huge difference in your draft. If you draft Marvin Harrison, he ends up being the wide receiver 17, you are playing from behind when the draft starts.
Yeah, you take that as a loss, for sure. I'll go to a two-pack of tight ends. I'll start with Sam Laporta again. Awesome player. He's going to be really good once again for a really long time. But tight ends deep. I know it's scary to say that, but I think it is. And I just don't see that huge of a gap between Laporta and the other elite tight ends in fantasy. Like he's going at like the early third round. For me, like I just look at it this way. He was like 0.3 points per game better than Mark Andrews last season. He was like 0.5 better than Evan Ingram. Kelsey was Kelsey in the playoffs. Kincaid's rookie season was overshadowed by Laporta's, but you can't tell me Laporta you project for a massive bump in fantasy points per game over him, over McBride, over Kelsey, over Andrews, even over Kittle maybe. And you also have the fact that we saw a lot of last season with Detroit where one of Gibbs and David Montgomery were out. But in the games where both those running backs were active, Laporta averaged about 2 fewer fantasy points per game. I think the touchdowns are coming down. and the Lions still ran the ball 55% of the time in the red zone, one of the highest rates in the NFL. I like LaPorta, but why would I draft him at the start of the third round when I can get Kelsey in the mid-third, you know, Andrews in the fourth, fifth, Kincaid in the fourth, fifth, McBride in the early fourth? Like, there's no reason I wouldn't do that. So, LaPorta's going to be great, Lions fans, but he's overvalued in drafts, and I think he's going to disappoint just based off where the other tight ends are going behind him.
Yeah, I co-sign on this one. Tight ends last year in half-point PPR formats, Adam, 11.5, 11.5, 11.3, 11.1 points per game. So the reason that you take a tight end or a quarterback back at a traditional onesie position is if you feel that player is going to vastly outperform the competition, yeah, like Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski did for years. Sam LaPorta is wonderful. I think he's a great tight end. I don't think he's going to separate that much that I need to invest in him at his ADP. Now, earlier this summer, I was able to get him a little bit later. I was able to get him around four, somewhere in there. That's different because I do want exposure to this Lions team, but I think he's a very safe floor, but I think his ceiling is going to be capped. So I agree with everything you said. Like LaPorta, I think he's going to be near the top three a fantasy tight ends this year, no doubt. But is he going to be that much better that I have to draft him as ADP? No, he doesn't.
Yeah, and I'll close it out with Cole Kmet, who I have been just not interested in for months, pretty much since Shane Waldron was hired, because I knew this was going to happen. And we saw it in the preseason. He's splitting time with Gerald Everett, which shouldn't surprise anybody because Cole Kmet is now in the Seattle Noah Fant role, which is awful for fantasy. Last year, Noah Fant split time with Will Dissly and Colby Parkinson. He ran a route on 50% of dropbacks, which was 25th among tight ends. He was outside the top 40 tight ends in targets per out run rate at 13%. Seattle last season with Waldron ran 12 personnel, 22% of the time, a top 12 rate. Even with those three wide receivers, this team's going to run a lot of 12. The first move they made in free agency was to sign DeAndre Swift. I believe the second one was to sign Gerald Everett, who's been alongside Waldron every step of the way. Even if there wasn't the 12 personnel, Shane Waldron, Gerald Everett impact here, I would still be completely off Cole Kmet because he has to compete. You know, they added Swift, Rome, Keenan Allen. So Cole Kmet, you know, 4 months ago I was not interested in. I've actually moved him down, which I didn't think I'd be able to do because I already was so low on him. But like, if you draft Cole Kmet, you pretty much just drafted a waiver wire tight end. That's how I view it.
Yeah, people have been arguing with me on social media about when they stack the Bears that they feel there's a positive to stacking Cole Kmet. I disagree. I think there are other Bears you should stack with, and I would never throw Cole Kmet in because, yes, he's part of the stack with Caleb Williams, but he has to beat out Gerald Everett, and they added Roma Dunze, and they added Keenan Allen, and they added DeAndre Swift. I would much rather take other tight ends around that area, even if it's not stacked. Players like KDOT and players like Juwan Johnson, Tyler Conklin, who I think are higher up on their team's depth chart in terms of targets. And that is the way I go. I don't want any interest in Cole Kmet at all, especially when I saw that he was at best sharing snaps with Gerald Everett.
Yeah, KDOT is somebody I struggle with because like he was always the player that made sense as like a cheap DFS play last season because he was like top five in route dropback percentage. Like he was always running routes, but just didn't get any looks. But I don't know, man, like Taysom Hill's tight end eligible across the industry for the most part. Like I might rather just take Taysom Hill.
Oh, 100%.
Taysom Hill scores from a yard out. He's going to outscore Cole Kmet every week.
Totally agree with you.
It's interesting. Anybody else stand out to you as potential busts for 2024?
I wouldn't say a bust. I do get nervous about David Njoku as much as I love him. And he put forth, I think it was 80. He had a fantastic one.
Something he like and Trey McBride were the two best tight ends in football the second half of the season.
Yeah, I guess I'm just a little concerned about him because of the quarterback situation. And if Deshaun Watson gets back to his normal level, that's fine. If he doesn't, I am concerned. They're now shopping Jameis Winston, the Browns. We saw a report on social media. Adam, I don't know why you would do that.
I think I saw today that despite that rumor that they are not shopping him.
Yeah, I think they'd be crazy.
Which, yeah, I wouldn't do that either. I mean, as a Bills fan, I would love him in Buffalo, but
yeah. And for fantasy, he'd be fantastic. Yes. But I like Njoku. I've had him last year. He's done well for me. He's a Cedar Grove, New Jersey product. God bless. But I just get a little nervous. I prefer Jake Ferguson. I probably prefer Bowers if the goal line rumors come true. And he's also getting drafted around Evan Engram, who should have a monster year. And listen, I know the Ingram's stats are suppressed when Christian Kirk is on the field because they run the same sort of short to intermediate route area. But the connection with Trevor Lawrence is strong. I'm bullish on the Jaguars. I like him a lot better than David Njoku. So I wouldn't say bust, Adam, but I would say lower than consensus. And I get nervous when he's my tight end one.
We have a couple pieces of somewhat breaking news here to end the show. The Steelers officially named Russell Wilson starting quarterback. I don't think that's too shocking.
Great.
This is more relevant to me. And I want to know how you feel about this because you love Isaiah Pacheco just like I'm starting to love him. The Chiefs are signing Samaje Perine to the active roster.
Yeah, that listen, that's a nice move for them. I don't think it affects Pacheco that much at all. I think they just want to make sure Pacheco stays healthy. I mean, that is one of the thinnest depth charts in all of the NFL because it was Carson Steele, who was a preseason great runner, but not a guy you want to turn your team over to. So that doesn't bother me at all. To me, it secures Pacheco. While he may not get the volume, Adam, that we thought he would get, we want to keep him on the field because if he stays on the field as the clear RB1 in one of the best offenses in the NFL, that's a good thing for us. So I have no problem with it. That's nice. I think it hurts Carson Steele a lot, obviously, but I have no problem with that. I think Pacheco's place is solid and P. Ryan can definitely spell and give some touches and maybe keep him fresh.
I'm a little bit more, I don't want to say worried. He's not taking him, you know, off the field exclusively, but like Andy Reid was talking about how he feels confident that Isaiah Pacheco can do all of the things on third downs. And maybe that's still true. Maybe this is just to have depth, like you said. If Samaje Perine plays a Jerick McKinnon role, Pacheco will not have top five upside like I originally thought he would. But if Perine's just there to kind of spell Pacheco like you think, then yeah, this does nothing to me. But that's going to be what I'm looking for. Perine obviously has been really, really reliable in pass pro, catching passes. So if Pacheco can still have that role, then I won't be too worried. But that's what I'm going to be watching with this news. And
my other issue, Adam, would be that all the running backs in that area, you know, the idea that Derrick Henry is going to get something like 300 carries in this Baltimore offense is lunacy. It is. They brought him in as an over 30 running back because they need to be able to run the ball late in the season and in bad weather and in the playoffs, which they either couldn't or didn't try to do last year against the Chiefs in the playoffs. So they're not going to give him 30 carries early in the year. I do believe that Justice Hill is going to be a part of this offense and maybe Keaton Mitchell when he comes back. So my point is everyone is doing running backs by committee, almost exclusively across the board. So to know who the backup is here, mm-hmm. and to know that Pacheco provides some versatility now on first and second down, that it doesn't just have to be a run, his receiving has gone up, I'm fine with. I don't think Samaje Perine is getting goal line carries. I think Pacheco is secure.
This does definitely make Pacheco a really good late round pick now, though, in best ball drafts, yeah. because like yeah, I think he's going to be the backup from day one.
100%.
So, all right. That will just about do it for us. Mike, appreciate the time, as always. Obviously, we have so much going on at FTN Fantasy. I talked about a ton of it, but I'm so excited because I last night started my week one research, and especially with the stats hub, like I'm breaking down the first game of the season between the Chiefs and Ravens, and the amount of different angles I can attack, you know, breaking down the matchups is so fun with the stats hub. So I'm stoked to be doing that and just getting ready for week one content. But over on the site, like what, outside of just saying everything, what should everybody be looking forward to at FTN Fantasy coming up, you know, before the season starts and of course during the season?
Yeah, we're going to have continuous content for you across the board, besides the rankings, besides the Discord, besides the weekly betting articles. We have Aaron Schatz now giving five picks in a paywalled article. You have all the great fantasy football content. The Discord is hopping. Two Gun is even going to be more active in the DFS streets. The only five-time millionaire maker winner that's out there who is available to talk to one-on-one. You want to come join us here, folks. We have incredible content and Stats Hub. Jeff Radcliffe's Draft Guide is flying off the charts. And of course, Aaron Schatz with DVOA. FTN, the only place to be.
Yeah, get signed up today. Hop aboard. Use that promo code FTN15 to get yourself 15% off. That will do it for us. For Mike, I am Adam. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back to close out the week on Friday as we get you set for those weekend fantasy football drafts. We are here. It is time. Thanks for listening. For FTN, I'm Adam. Talk to you next time. Peace.